1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On today's edition of the program, college athletes could get paid now. What does that mean? We'll explain in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with David Sampson, the former president of the Miami Marlins. Talk with him about sticky baseballs, Cubs and White Sox news, and so much more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Before we start today, I have to tell you about State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. A lot of our listeners have gone to him for all their insurance needs, and he's been very helpful in getting them the coverage they deserve. There's no games with Brian. He's just here to help and make sure you feel safe. If you have insurance needs and you haven't called him yet, what are you waiting for? Dial up the number, 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or find him online at brianismyagent.com. That's brianismyagent.com, and make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. Up until a few days ago, there were only two jobs that you could not have in this country when you were 18 years old. Only two. You could drop out of school, start your own business, work at McDonald's, join the Army, and make real money by doing any of that. But you couldn't play professional football, and you couldn't play professional basketball. And get this, you weren't allowed to make money. You had to go through the NCAA, adhere to their policies and their rules, and not even make a penny. Oh, and guess what? If you did, you'd be outed and banned. And you need to apply for reinstatement. And your hopes of going to the NFL or the NBA would be taken away immediately. Sounds like a plan? You want to sign up for it? What a joke. The NCAA, for those of you who don't know, is a monopsony. A monopsony is an exclusive employer, like a monopoly. One company, monopsony, one employer. You could not make a move if you wanted to play in the NFL without going through the NCAA. That's restricting freedom, and more importantly, you're not being paid fairly for your work. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh said, quote, "The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America." Thank you. Very illegal. You're taking advantage of 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, forcing them to play sports, and you're not paying them a penny. Oh, and if you want to go to the next level, if you want to be promoted, you have to go through their system only. Don't you see how wrong that is? It's a joke. Total farce. And for decades upon decades, it existed, and no one said a word. Everyone abided by their policies and their rules, which were a bunch of nonsense. Finally, though, it's over. It's over. Athletes, at any age, now have power. NCAA came out the other day and said, yes, you are allowed to monetize your name, image, and likeness and not face a penalty. And some athletes already, the day after that was said, have gotten deals. Spencer Rattler, the quarterback from Oklahoma, got a deal with Raising Cane's. More to come in the next few months. Great stuff. Now, as much as we should be rejoicing over this, and we are, we will, we have to remember the unintended consequences from a decision like this. Think about this. There are about 350, 360 Division I schools in America. Some have said this could be the tipping point to paying athletes, having schools pay athletes. That could be next. I'm not opposed to it, personally. But you have to realize what you're asking for. Not every one of those D1 programs have the money to pay their athletes. Plain and simple. I'm not saying that's wrong or right, everyone should be paid, but the point is, the funds aren't there. If the requirement comes down to pay athletes, you will lose lots of D1 schools, like what happened to Major League Baseball over the past couple of years. 60 minor league teams have been eliminated because no pay. The pay isn't fair, so the team folds, which means less opportunities to make the MLB. Now, that's it. Every player is making a bit more money, but less opportunities. It's a trade-off. Same here. It's going to be a trade-off. Even with the NIL now being signed, there's going to be a trade-off. Athletes will have to choose which brands to take and which ones not to take. Colleges will have to abide by this policy and realize it. What happens, for example, if Spencer Rattler gets benched at Oklahoma and he has a deal with Nike? We don't know. We have no clue how that's going to play out. In every decision in life, not just in sports or economics, in life, there's always a trade-off. There's always an opportunity cost. What would have happened if I didn't do this? What was my number one second choice? What was I going to do if this didn't happen? With this policy coming into place, well, what would have happened if it still wasn't in effect? More under-the-table dealings? More suspensions? More guys applying for reinstatement? Some guys leaving the NCAA entirely and going to play in Europe, Australia, wherever it might be? And athletes continuing to not be paid for their work? This is from Justice Kavanaugh, quote, "Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers a fair market rate on the theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate." Can you believe that? I mean, really think about that here. Listen to what he said. "Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers a fair market rate on the theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate. The reason the NCAA is still in business is because they don't pay their workers. Nowhere else in America can a business say, we're in business, but we're not going to pay you." The NCAA did it for 100 years, longer, and subjected its athletes to long hours for no pay. For those of you watching, you probably know a student athlete. Of course you do. They're balancing school and then 5 a.m. practice, 9 p.m. practice, games, bus rides, trips. Not easy. Shouldn't they be paid for that? And I hate the argument that, oh, they're paid by their college tuition. No, they're not. It's not pay at all, because you're putting in 12-hour days, 13-hour days between athletics and school. You're not getting paid fairly with just a free education. No. And I think it's so ridiculous that in the past, You've had people get in trouble for trying to make money off their name. The whole Reggie Bush scandal. Give me a break. So what if he had a sponsor? What's the big deal? If pro athletes could do it, why can't you? You're younger. It's your life. Do it. I hate the argument against it. Oh, it's immoral. It's unethical. How is it unethical to make money for yourself? It's against policy. Yeah, who put the policy in place? An organization that is defined by not paying their workers and staying in business and making money. I'd love to know how much the NCAA's executives make. And yet their athletes don't even make a dime. And the best part is, if they try to make a dime, if they try to go out and do something for themselves to make money for their family, they're punished. Want to auction off memorabilia? No, you can't. Want to go sign some football cards to make money? Can't do that. Want to have an endorsement deal with Nike? Nope. The college can, but the player can't. I am shocked that it's taken this long for people to see this. I mean, shouldn't we have known this from a long time ago? This is relatively new, this movement of paying college athletes. Couldn't we see from a while ago? Why does the college get to have endorsement deals? Why does the NCAA and its executives make money? The executives of an industry that prides itself on not paying workers make money. The workers don't make anything. And if they try to, they're punished. We're taking away your Heisman Trophy. We're taking away your national championship. Are you kidding me? That screws them up for life. It's ridiculously overbearing. And I'm so happy it's over. And for those who don't like this, there are some who are not happy about this decision, deal with it. What, do you want this system to stay in place where 18, 19, 20-year-old kids are being taken advantage of and they can't even make a penny? And if they try to, they're punished. Again, quote, the NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America. Correct. So correct. They pride themselves on not paying their workers anything. We could go back and forth about what a fair wage is. That's fine, but they don't pay anything. There is no wage at all. And the people at the top make great money, profiting off the backs of kids, trying to go to the next level. And to this day, you still can't go to the NFL nor the NBA unless you go through the NCAA first and bow down to the NCAA. Does that sound right to you? You're more than welcome to join the Army, to work at McDonald's, start your own company, but you can't play NFL football or NBA basketball? Are you kidding me? That's the system that's being put into place here in America. Foreign athletes aren't subject to that. Luka Doncic was 19 when he debuted. He didn't play college ball in Europe. He played professional ball and came here. So foreign athletes have more freedom when it comes to work and wages than American ones. They did up until this rule came into place. Think about that. You've got a whole industry that is American, NCAA. Yet other athletes had privileges that they didn't. Should just be equal across the board. You shouldn't have to conform to the NCAA if you want to play NFL football or NBA basketball. And this is just the domino, the first domino to fall. I feel like more is going to come. There will come a point where athletes will be paid, I think, from colleges. When that happens, though, just remember, you won't see as many D1 programs. That's the cost. I'm all for athletes being paid. But when they do, there will be less programs, less of an opportunity. You have to be better to make it, because there won't be as many places to try and make it to the NFL or the NBA. It's a very weird situation, but here's the one thing that makes complete sense. Their business model is illegal. It is. Restricting athletes, telling them you can't make any money, punishing them when they go out of their way to try and provide for themselves or their family, and forcing them to play in your league by your rules for at least 2 years is a joke. And it should be illegal. Can you imagine if a legitimate company did that to its workers? There'd be an uproar in this country. Rightfully so. But there was really no uproar about this till 3 or 4 years ago. That should have changed. Should have been a big deal way before recently. These are kids being taken advantage of. Other people profiting off their backs, off their athletic success. It's unfortunate that it has to be this way. The good thing is, change is here. My hope is, though, detractors and people who don't support this come around to realize that the NCAA and what they've done should be illegal. I mean, how would you feel if you went to your job and they told you you have to stay here for 2 years and we're not going to pay you a penny? You'd leave the job, or you'd try to, but then you'd realize, oh, I got to stay for 2 years. That's ridiculous. That's an abuse of power. And now finally, thanks to this ruling, the NCAA has less. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with David Sampson comes up next, so stay tuned. Sports Talk Chicago. Herbert John Zaglul, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the former president of the Miami Marlins and the host of Nothing Personal on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Please welcome David Sampson to the program. David, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
So, David, what's your take on sticky baseballs?
I think that pitchers have been using sticky stuff and foreign substances for every year I was in baseball, which was 18 years, and it was just known. We knew our pitchers did it. We knew opposing teams' pitchers did it, and we wanted our pitchers to do it because it gave them better grip and better command. But like anything, time passes, technology improves, and what happened is pitchers started using different foreign substances, and those foreign substances were not for grip and command. They were actually to improve your spin rate, make your breaking ball break differently. And it enabled pitchers to strike out hitters at a rate that had not been seen before. And it was going too far. So MLB decided it's enough. And they made the decision to take away all sticky substances, which I don't think is a great decision at all.
What kind of substances were used when you were in the game?
Rosin along with sunscreen is always a good one. There's jellies that can be used, and you can mix it all together into some concoction. People would come into our clubhouse at Marlins Park and not realize what they were looking at, but we kept a vat of sunscreen outside the training room in Marlins Park. And of course, Marlins Park has a roof, and of course you're playing night games. So it's not like we were trying to stop people from getting skin cancer, which is obviously something you should do, and you should use suntan lotion. But clearly, you don't need suntan lotion when there is a roof.
Why do you think this is a bad decision for baseball?
Because I don't like that they did it in the middle of the season. I don't like that they had to go to the extreme and take away all sticky substances of any kind, including what Hector Santiago of the Mariners got suspended for, which is putting rosin in his glove. that's something as a team president, I want pitchers to have rosin in their glove. I want them to have command of the ball because I don't want my players to get hit in the face with an errant fastball. You're trying to pitch inside and you're trying to be competitive when you're on the mound and you just want to be careful. You're throwing a ball. Back when guys were throwing 85 and 90, 92, 94, and there was one guy in your bullpen throwing 97, I didn't think about it as much. Now everybody in the bullpen is throwing 97, 98. Velocity has just is off the charts now for both starters and for relievers. And I just want everyone to be careful. And I think that changing the rule in the middle of the season was too knee-jerk. I think what you do is at the end of the year, you let the union know, here's what's coming. Here's what we're going to have to negotiate. We're going to come up with a substance that we can all agree on. But all of this extra stuff like the spider tack, et cetera, we're taking that out of the game.
You know, you mentioned spin rate and you mentioned strikeouts. Do you think that's a sticky substance problem or is that an approach at the plate on the hitter's part?
So I spoke to a bunch of hitters about this and they have a skill that I'll never have, no matter how many years you're a team president. I cannot hit a baseball that's going 90 miles an hour at all. Try going into a cage one day and setting it at 90 and then, God forbid, make it a slider and you can't even get bad on the ball when you're normal. But what happens is these hitters, they've been hitting baseballs their whole life. They've got amazing hand-eye coordination. But what they're doing, because you've got such a short period of time to make contact and decide whether or not you're going to swing, is you swing the bat in the place where you expect the ball to be given your recognition of the pitch that's coming. And when you're right, that means you've squared up the ball. When you're wrong, you can look foolish like swinging at an 0-2 slider in the dirt. When you think you're waiting fastball, you're sitting fastball, and you look sort of foolish. What happens is with the extra spin that these new foreign substances are giving, the hitters are putting the bat where they expect the ball to be with recognizing the type of pitch it is. And they're right, except the ball's not there now because there's extra spin, which takes the ball further out of the hitting zone than it otherwise would be. And therefore, you're seeing more strikeouts.
That's a great explanation. David Sampson, you're on Sports Talk Chicago. David, are you concerned about this moving forward in baseball for next year and the years after? I know Pete Alonso said that, you know, MLB alters baseball for free agency. We've got a new CBA coming up. How concerning is this whole situation to you?
Well, you bring up Pete Alonso. Just forget that. That was a laughable statement. There's just as many free agent pitchers as there are free agent hitters. There's no way that I'm taking the time or Rob Manfred or any executive taking the time to doctor baseballs in a way to hurt one group of free agents and therefore help another. I'm not sure what he was talking about other than carrying the water of maybe some union thought. But what concerns me going into this collective bargaining agreement negotiation in baseball, the collective bargaining agreement runs out on December 1st. And they just don't like each other. They don't trust each other. They're going to fight about what shape the table will be during their meetings. They're going to fight about the location of the meetings, what kind of sandwiches are being served. And they're doing that because they believe if they agree that the sky is blue, then they're going to lose a negotiating point and lose money. And so the atmosphere is so negative that I'm worried that enough progress will not be made on issues that are easy to solve. So when you do a collective bargaining agreement, let's say there's 300 issues, generally 260 of them are simple. And then you negotiate and worry about the last 40. You make trade, you trade off one issue for another. You do economic analysis together and say, all right, this universal DH will benefit the union by a total of $200 million. So therefore, we'd like this benefit for your pension benefits. We want a little savings that'll add up to $200 million. Let's make that trade and let's move forward. But when you can't agree on the 260 easy ones, it makes for a long slog.
What do you think could be in place if they somehow agree, like new changes to the game?
Well, I think you're going to see the universal DH back. I think you're going to see a universal substance that's allowed for pitchers to use in order to get grip and command. I think that you are going to see changes to how arbitration works in terms of who's eligible for arbitration and when. I think you're going to see an increase in the minimum salary because one of the things the union is super focused on is getting younger players paid more faster. Because now when you are in your first 3 years in baseball, the team decides what they're going to pay you unilaterally. They just have to pay you above the minimum, which I think this year is getting close to 600 or 650. I can't remember the number, but I think you're going to see some changes in that regard.
David Sampson, you're on Sports Talk Chicago. David, what's your evaluation of the Cubs season so far?
I think it's going to turn out exactly as we all suspected it would. And everyone was super excited when they were playing well early in the season. And the league and every year is littered with teams who get off to a good start. But over 162 games, generally the teams who are supposed to do well, and the teams who are not supposed to do well don't do well. And everyone was talking about how Theo left the Cubs and he was concerned the team wasn't going to be good enough and he didn't want to be around for a rebuild and he didn't want to be around to get rid of some of the free agents who helped him win the World Series in 2016. And when the Cubs started off great, everyone was saying, wow, Theo really missed the mark on that evaluation. And he didn't. And last year in the 60-game season, anything can happen, like the Marlins making the playoffs, right? Anything can happen over any 60-game stretch. But over 162, you can't hide. And that's what's happening to the Cubs. And they've got decisions to make that are not going to be as hard as you think in terms of Rizzo and Baez and Bryant. And I know it's terrible to talk about because they were there for the World Series and there's an emotional attachment, but it's just business, right? It's nothing personal to the fans or to those players, but they're not going to be able to re-sign those players because they're not worth the money that they are going to want to get somewhere in free agency. And the Cubs need to reopen a new window of winning.
How do you determine personally whether you be buyers or sellers in Miami? What went into that decision?
So our rule was we wanted to be within 5 games of a playoff spot at the deadline. Okay. And if we were within 5 games of even a wild card, any wild card, and what happened is some years we'd be 6 or 7 and we'd say, listen, we're only 2 games away from being 5 games out. Why don't we add? And we wanted to add as early as possible, like in June, because that would give us an extra month to see how the team played. And then we could go from buyers to sellers. So you can buy early and then sell late if it doesn't work out. It's very hard to give up on a season when it's not obvious. Like if you're not the Pirates or the Orioles or the Marlins this year, it's hard to make the decision to sell because you spend so many hours and so many days, weeks, and months working on the season, putting your roster together. And then in 2 short months, it's gone, and you know you've got to start again. So it's a tougher decision than you think.
Should the Cubs sell?
Yes, immediately. Save as much as you can in order to make sure that you get from Ricketts as high a payroll as you can, knowing that Ricketts got really hurt by COVID, no doubt, and I don't blame him for trying to recapture some of the lost income. I don't blame him for wanting to run a profitable business. But if you can save some money off this year's payroll in order to help, you know, allay the losses that you had, I would suggest doing that. And I think that Hoyer has to be honest with Ricketts and say, we are not this bad, you know, losing 9 in a row. And we're not as good as we were when we were in first place. But we are in this era, this year with no expanded playoffs, we're not going to make the playoffs.
What about the White Sox? What's their trade deadline approach to you?
Well, look at the makeup of the All-Star team, and you can see how phenomenal their pitching staff is. You can see where they are offensively. You can see in their division, no matter how Cleveland is playing, and they're certainly playing better than anyone expected, Minnesota's playing worse, and they're going to end up selling, which really hurts, and that's a tough decision to make. It's the White Sox division to win, and I think they will win it, even though I didn't pick them before the season. So my deadline approach is based on a playoff roster. And while I'm happy with all of our pitching in the playoffs, you need more pitching because as the season goes on, the arms get more tired. You're going to see more injuries, especially because we had a 60-game season last year and a 162 this year. So as we get into late summer, August, September, we've had a rash of injuries this year, most ever, but it's going to get even worse. So if I'm the White Sox, I'm looking for depth.
How impressed are you with their resiliency to date? They've had a lot of injuries and they're still winning.
It's amazing. You look at that team and you just feel as though that I don't want to say that Tony La Russa is the person to get the credit, but certainly there were many opportunities for La Russa to fail. There were rumors early on about what was going on in the clubhouse and some of the problems he was having. There was the issue when he was not backing up his players and he could have lost the clubhouse. And it just goes to show you that all sorts of sins can be covered up by W's.
Would you have hired La Russa if you were in that position, if you were Rick Hahn or White Sox management?
Well, Hahn and Williams did not hire La Russa.
Correct.
So to be clear, that's a Reinsdorf hire. So if I were Hahn and Williams, I would not have hired La Russa, no chance. But when your owner says to you, hey, we're hiring Tony La Russa, you say, we really shouldn't. And the owner says, but we are. And you say, is there any chance we could interview or look at other people and maybe go a different direction? And then the owner says, you can interview whoever you want, but guess what? We're hiring La Russa. At some point, you just give up and say, all right, we're hiring La Russa.
Has that ever happened to you?
I think no more than 10 or 12 times.
Really?
Yeah, we hired and fired a lot of managers. And our owner had a very, you know, he wanted Joe Girardi. He wanted Jack McKeon. Once he wanted Jeff Torborg. When we had a Lou, he wanted Torborg. When we had Torborg, he wanted McKeon. When we had Ian, he wanted Girardi. When we had Girardi, he wanted anyone with a pulse, right? So, it, you know, when we had Redmond, he wanted Guillen. When we lost Guillen because he was so terrible, you know, he just on and on and on. It's hard to find a manager. It's hard for consistency. So I have great respect for teams who keep managers for long periods of time. It's really, really hard because when you have a team that you want to be better than it is, you've got to find a way to assign blame, and you're not going to fire yourself. And I sure as hell wasn't going to get fired for it. So it flows downhill.
Did you ever get a choice in the managerial decisions?
I was involved in every interview process, and we would take, and we did it with the GM and the president of baseball operations, and we did it with the head of player personnel. And there were times, like with the hiring of Mike Redmond, where it was we consulted with Jeffrey, told him what we wanted, and he met with Redmond and agreed, especially given Redmond's pedigree as having been on a World Series team. But many times we knew, like with Mattingly, we knew Jeffrey wanted Mattingly, and we were hiring Mattingly. So we did a deal with the Dodgers to make sure that we could get him.
Did you have an issue with that, the fact that you're in this position and you really didn't get much of a choice?
You know, it's funny. I have a different view of life. An owner is an owner because the owner is risking his money and his time, and it's his name at the end of the day associated with the team. So I never got offended by what we used to call OP, owner's prerogative. I didn't always agree with it. It didn't always work. But, hey, it worked unbelievably in 03 when he demanded that we sign Pudge Rodriguez, and that helped us win a World Series. So nobody's going to get it right all the time. Our owner did not meddle more than other owners. Every owner meddles, no matter. Some are just better at it. Some are more under the radar than others. But every owner in that owner's meeting room where I spent so many years, every owner meddles.
More to come with David Sampson in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. David Sampson, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. David, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, the player you least got along with on the Marlins was who?
I did not get along with, at the time, I did not get along well with A.J. Burnett. I did not get along well with Heath Bell. I did not get along well with Jeff Baker, who is a bench player for us. But the overwhelming number of players I got along with, because I was honest with them, I was fair. They may not have agreed with what I said or what I did, but they were never surprised by it. And that was how I ran the team for 18 years. I communicated with the players way more than our GM would have liked, way more than our owner would have liked. But I was telling them when there was, you know, possibilities of trades. I was telling them what we were doing with negotiations, where we were with our offers, where we'd be willing to get to, where we wouldn't be willing to get to. And I never told them something that then didn't come true. So eventually they started to realize, wow, he's a little different than other team presidents. And so I was very lucky that way.
What about your favorite player? Who would that be?
I mean, I really enjoyed, I mean, my closest friend to this day of any player I had is Jeff Conine.
Really?
We are friends off the field and really, really close friends off the field. I'm so close with Dan Uggla. I'm so close with Cody Ross. I Stanton and I are still close. So, you know, there's a bunch of great players. I've just been very lucky over the years with the players we had coming through the organization. One of the benefits of churning your roster is you get to meet a lot more players, right? So it wasn't like I had 25 guys for 10 years. So it makes it so you're lucky enough to be in a lot in the orbit of a lot of great, great players.
And David, before we finish up today, last question, is it true that at one point you wanted to be the NBA commissioner?
So I wanted to be an NBA player.
Really?
That's what I first wanted to be. I would go to bed at night dreaming about being a point guard for the Knicks. And I just wasn't tall enough. And I would practice free throws and handling the ball and left-handed layups, even though I'm a righty, and dribbling with my left hand. And I really thought I could do it. And it was a very tough day when I realized it'd be easier to be the president of a team than to be on a team. And while some people may say that's still great, I would tell you that I would trade all 18 years of being president for one game with the New York Knicks as an NBA player. Actually, the coolest thing I got to do is I got to play for the Washington Generals one day against the Harlem Globetrotters. And it was in Miami on the home court of Miami Heat. And I did it, and it felt amazing, but I realized that I am not exactly as good as Muggsy Bogues or Spud Webb.
Well, David, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to have you on, and best wishes, of course, as the MLB season continues and with nothing personal. Really appreciate the time.
Have a great day. Thank you.
Great talk there with David Sampson, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to David Sampson himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTalbe, and Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No! Where are the Turtles?